Hi, everyone. Welcome to our last TIE meeting of the year. Glad you could all join us and glad to see there are some folks online as well. If you have any ideas for next year, anyone that you would like to see present, or if there is any topics you want to have us talk about, please shoot an email to me or Brandon or Roy, the other co-chairs. Our emails are in all the announcements that we send out. We're very happy to have the CS50 group with us today, and I am going to turn it over to David Malin, who will introduce his team.
Hi, thanks so much, everyone. My name is David Malin. I teach Harvard's introductory course in computer science called CS50. As frequently as we can, we try to use open source and off-the-shelf tools to solve problems inside and outside of the classroom. But what you'll see today is there is a number of problems that we decided to take on solutions ourselves, actually writing code with which to solve them. A number of those solutions are to problems that have nothing to do with CS per se, just more course workflow problems. A few are CS-specific. But for all of them, will this be a bit of a fire hose? We've allowed ourselves just a few minutes to give you a taste of each of the tools. We'll provide you with the URLs of documentation for everything else, and happy to answer questions one-on-one during the talk and at the end if you would like to learn a bit more. And thanks as well to those of you who are tuning in remotely via Zoom or the internet. Happy to take your questions via Susan here as well. But a few quick introductions to some of my colleagues, if you'd like to come up. The four of us are just a few of the folks behind the scenes who have worked on all of these tools.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian. I'm a current senior at the college right now, and I served as the head teaching fellow for CS50 this past fall. And I've also been working on the development of a number of the tools that you'll see later today.
Hi, everyone. I'm Erin Carvalho. I work mainly with our outreach team for high school. I also do some of the courses work regarding academic honesty, and I am a current member of the Graduate School of Education in the Technology Innovation Education track.
Hello, everyone. My name is Karim Zidane, and I am a preceptor here at Harvard. I mostly do software development and system administration with the CS50 team here.
Wonderful. All right, so you'll hear from each of us in turn. Thought we'd begin right away pretty much with demos punctuated by some URLs. In fact, if you'd like to take a look at any of these slides, they are at that short URL there, and we'll pull that up later as well. So we thought we'd have a bit of a laundry list of demos here. So 12 tools related to teaching and learning and course administration. We'll start with a few that are independent of computer science, and I'll dive right in with the first, which we call Forms 50. And everything is documented as well at this URL here, cs50.readthedocs.io. So I can tell you empirically, after many years of teaching CS50, that 10% of Harvard students cannot type their email address correctly. This is the result of having done many surveys over the years with SurveyMonkey and Qualtrics and Google Forms and the like. This is not good for a course, especially our size, with some 800 students, because even 10% incorrect email addresses or HUIDs or names just means a lot of manual cleanup. So what we wanted to do was have students start authenticating for Google Forms so that they would be compelled to provide some identifying information, maybe their Harvard key and their password, and then we would pre-populate forms for them just to decrease the probability of that happening. And also, we very commonly have forms posted on the course's website that, of course, are on the internet and open to everyone, and we simply wanted to avoid a situation where non-students might discover a form, fill it out for whatever reasons, whether it's for an event or an assignment or something else. So we wanted to just raise the barrier to accessing Google Forms. Of course, using Google Suite, you can restrict access to members of an organization, but for a course like us, where we have lots of cross-registered students, it doesn't suffice to limit things to college.harvard.edu or just g.harvard.edu. We wanted to use Harvard Key more generally. So thus was born forms.cs50.io, which lives exactly at that URL. And when you go to this URL, you'll see yourself prompted for the URL of any Google Form that you have created using your own organizational or personal account. You can then decide whether or not to prompt students or users to authenticate via Harvard, or in our case, Yale, or edX, or GitHub, which is somewhat CS50 specific use case, but Harvard Key is the default option checked for you when you're on campus. And so suppose I did want to go and create a Google Form, I might pull up an untitled form like this. This might be something like RSVP for lunch. And of course, the first question we might ask students is their name. We might then ask them to provide an email address. And I could also provide prompts like, are you RSVPing, yay or nay? And say we'll say yes or no. I could additionally prompt for other things like Harvard Key, or in the case of Yale, their net ID or their username in the case of GitHub. But for now, we'll keep it simple with just name and email address. And normally, you would go ahead and just view that form with the built-in Google URL. But instead, I'm going to go ahead and copy that go back to forms.cs50.io and just paste the URL here rather than actually sharing that directly with students. I'm going to go ahead and click Next. And what we go ahead and do is parse the form for you. We notice that, oh, you have a field called name. Well, why don't we go ahead and pre-fill that with the respondent's name? And you have an email address field. Why don't we go ahead and pre-fill that with the user's email address? And then you, as the admin, can go ahead and click Next. You'll be prompted to log in with your own Harvard key just to demonstrate that you're indeed a member of the Harvard community. And then voila, you're given a URL of the form forms.cs50.io/unique identifier. And this would be the URL. Then you post on the course's website, share via an email, or the like. And if a student were to then visit that, he or she would be prompted to log in via Harvard key themselves. If they go ahead and log in there, and do two-factor if prompted, voila, the form is pre-populated for you. We now have 0% of email addresses incorrectly inputted onto Google Forms. This, frankly, is just a nice general purpose tool for any course. So related to that is this notion of authenticating users as well. So in addition to having URLs of forms online, we very often want to actually restrict access to any URL. Maybe this is the URL of a PDF that we want to share with a sample solution, or it's the URL of a video that we want students to be able to access, but only after they've authenticated. You can, of course, write an entire web application to authenticate users. That's not a particularly light-handed solution. And so thus was born CS50 Vault. CS50 Vault is a web app that lives at vault.cs50.io. And just like the forms tool, it just prompts you for a URL. But this can literally be any URL on the internet to which you want to add Harvard key authentication. You can, of course, do this if you're already using a Canvas tool or some other Harvard key-based access tool. But we often want to just restrict access to certain YouTube videos that we might have posted unlisted. So therefore, anyone can technically access them. But we just want to raise the barrier to people finding them. And we want to post them on the course's website, but we don't necessarily want random folks who aren't in the course discovering those links. So we just want to raise the bar, similarly for sample solutions as well. And so if, for instance, we wanted to distribute an exam to students in the current semester that I have here in the form of a sample Google Doc, I might go ahead and paste this URL. As before, specify that I want to authenticate users by Harvard key. I'll be logged in myself just to demonstrate that I'm a member of the community. And not unlike before, vault.cs50.io is what they then see, followed by a unique ID. And if I now go to this, before you can even access whatever that original URL is, you would actually be prompted to log in. And in this case, again, you'll be redirected to the final exam in this case, at which point you see whatever that URL is. But there's some customizations too. Very often, we want to have some barrier to students accessing something like a YouTube video. And so there's some customizations built in. If I go ahead and paste in a YouTube URL, you'll see that you're first prompted to customize it. So do you want to add the original URL that you typed in, which is this one that I copied and pasted from a little cheat sheet a moment ago? Or do you want us to parameterize it for you with URLs embed format, with an autoplay equals one, with showing info equals zero, just to clean up the UI and really hide the source? So if I go ahead and say yes to that one, log in as before. I'll be given another randomly generated unique identifier. And if a student were to go and visit that URL, they too would be prompted to log in. And in this case, they'd be whisked away to the embedded YouTube video, which would be, in this case, one here. So it just raises the bar. Like, it is absolutely the case that in both of these situations, a adversarial student could copy and paste the destination URL, share that publicly. But that's not the use case we have in mind. The goal is to be able to post things on our own course's website that if they leak out, OK, it's not a huge deal, but we don't want them to be necessarily accessed in broad or indexed by Google, or the like. So that then is CS50 Vault, the ability to add authentication using Harvard key to any URL that might be of interest to you. So in CS50 too, problem three is to just draw on a chalkboard or draw on a whiteboard. We've wanted to make this more digital these days. So we have the fortune in Sanders of having a nice Microsoft Surface Hub where you can draw with your finger or with a pen. But it turns out that a lot of the software that comes with a lot of these hardware solutions, frankly, not that good. There's often a lot of Chrome or a lot of GUI in the way. And we don't particularly like that ending up on the videos when it's just a distraction. We don't need half a dozen features when all I want to do is draw with my finger something in black and white. So thanks to a member of our team, do we have draw50, which is literally lives at draw.cs50.io. And while I can simulate this with my MacBook Pro, if you have a Microsoft Surface or an iPad and a finger, can you just visit this and then just go ahead as though this were a touchscreen in a classroom and draw anything you want using a bit of math and a nice library? Do we clean up my otherwise messy handwriting? Using two fingers on an actual touchscreen, can you delete very quickly? Using three fingers, can you massively delete the whole screen really quickly? And the goal was just to approximate what maybe a lot of us do with normal chalkboard, which is sort of do this really quickly and not have to pull up a menu and clean it. And really, you go through very suboptimal GUIs. So if you want a quick and dirty tool in any classroom that has a touchscreen and you just want to be able to draw, thus was born this particular tool. And now the last one that I'll demo before turning things over to my colleagues here is a little more technical. It's called CLI 50, for Command Line Interface 50. And the goal of this app here is to enable students to, or TFs alike, to have access to a Linux environment on their own Mac or PC easily. For those of you who might be connected with or teaching computer science courses, that tends to be one of the most frustrating problems at the start of the semester, just getting every student's machine configured similarly. But you don't necessarily need the weight of a GUI or Eclipse or tools that are traditionally used that are fairly heavyweight for this solution. So thus was born CLI 50, Command Line Interface 50, which for those familiar, allows you to have a nice black and white blinking prompt in a so-called terminal window on your own Mac or PC, but running Linux, another operating system underneath the hood. And so for instance, on my Mac here, suppose that I've downloaded in advance a few folders, Student 1, Student 2, Speller, which happen to be related to some of our own homework assignments. And for whatever technical reason, you need access to Linux, this particular operating system, to run the files, to run the software. Maybe it's a sort of data science-y type tool that only runs on Linux, but you have a Mac or PC and want to run it locally. So on my own Mac's terminal window, this black and white window is just free software that comes with Mac OS, and Windows has a nice version of this these days as well. Can I go ahead and run CLI 50? And after a bit of metadata that's being output, just it auto updates itself and tells you what TCP ports are exposed if familiar with networking. It just gives you another black and white prompt. But if I go ahead and type a command in this text-based environment called ls for list, I can see the very contents of my current folder on my Mac, but they've been mounted, so to speak, exposed inside of Linux. So I can now run any Linux command or any piece of software that requires Linux on my own Mac or PC. And again, without any graphical user interface, though we have a different solution to that. So that's CLI 50. Let me pause for just a moment to see if there's any questions on that fire hose of demos before I turn things over to my colleagues. Yeah?
On the vault, what's to keep me from, you know, finding a public URL that I want to put a public key in front of for queries?
Nothing. So you, as a member of the Harvard community, must first authenticate as yourself in order to put something behind the vault, so to speak. But you can put any URL behind authentication that way. But it is associated with you, ultimately. Yeah. Yeah?
For the CLI 50, are you running a virtual machine?
Good question. No, this actually uses a technology called Docker, which is a containerization technology, if unfamiliar. And this is just a lighter weight version of what are called virtual machines. And the short of it is that they boot much faster in seconds instead of, frankly, sometimes minutes, which is a technology we used to use in the class. All right. Allow me to turn things over next to Kareem.
All right, thank you everyone for joining us today. I'm going to be talking about three of the tools that we use in CS50 today. The first one of them is CS50 Sandbox. And teachers often in programming classes find themselves wanting to demonstrate examples or have their students follow along some tutorials or even distribute sample code or sample solutions in class. So the problem that CS50 Sandbox is trying to solve is actually allowing these teachers to easily create temporary programming environments that they can use and they can share copies of with their students instantly in their classrooms. So right now I'm at sandbox.cs50.io here, and I'm presented with the main page of CS50 Sandbox, and I have a few checkboxes right here. Two of them are selected by default, with a text editor, with a terminal window, so I can create a temporary programming environment as easily as clicking the create button here, wait a few seconds for my environment to be created, and if the internet cooperates, hopefully I have my programming environment up and running like that. All right, so another example that I mentioned is teachers wanting to, actually, let me go back before that to the previous. So another way to create one of these temporary sandboxes is actually by constructing a URL that we can have here. Oops, sorry. So if I go to sandbox.tsct.io, file equals mario.c, for example, and window equals terminal, and window equals editor, I can do the same thing and create another temporary programming environment, this time with a file that's pre-created for me called mario.c in this case, and my terminal window down here. So another use case is if a teacher has some base code for some assignment that they want to distribute, for example, or some sample solutions, they can create their own sandboxes with the files that they want inside of it and pre-populate these files with code, as you can see here. And then they can share copies of these environments with their students simply by clicking the share button here on the top right corner, copying this URL, and sharing it with students. And the effect of visiting that URL by a student is, first of all, having to log in with their GitHub account if they're not logged in already. But that will give their students a distinct, separate copy of the same environment, pre-populated with the same files, with the same code inside of it. So I think this is all what I have for the CS50 sandbox. The next tool that I'm going to talk about is the CS50 lab. Let me reload this page just quickly. And again, teachers in programming classes often find themselves wanting to create, to be able to easily create assignments for their students. So the CS50 lab enables these teachers to create these step-by-step assignments for their students to enable scaffolded learning for them. So in this case, we have a popular assignment from CS50 called Mario, in which students are asked to build half a pyramid with hashtags. So in this case, I have, in the left half of my screen here, I have the instructions for my assignment, and specifically the first step of these instructions. On the right-hand side, I have a persistent programming environment that's associated specifically with this lesson or this lab. And you can see we have a video here for Zamala introducing the problem at first. If we click next, we jump to the next step of the assignment. And then we have things like images here. We have code formatting, as you can see here. We also have hints that students can optionally view. And you know, if they're stuck on one of the problems, maybe that will help them, and so on. So how can teachers create one of these labs or lessons? So we use GitHub for this. So a teacher needs to have a GitHub account. They need to have a repository in their GitHub account for their lab or their labs. In this case, I'm in the CS50/labs repository in our CS50 organization. And if I can point something out here, notice the URL of the lab up here, lab.csat.io/csat/labs/abcd/mario. And this is very human-friendly, very human-readable, but it also hints at where the lab is or where does it live on GitHub. So in this case, I'm in the csat/labs repository. I'm in my ABCD branch, and within that branch, I have a folder called Mario that presumably contains the source for my lab. So to create one of these labs, minimally you need a file called .csft.yaml. And if you're not familiar, YAML is a language that's often used for configuration. It's sort of like JSON, except that it's more human-friendly or human-readable and has a couple more features. So if I open this file here, minimally, I need this lab50:true key value pair. And this will basically allow me to create one of these labs. To add instructions to my lab, I need to create a readme.md file, a file that you typically find in a normal GitHub repository explaining what's in this repository. And this file is actually .md, short for Markdown. This is written in a language called Markdown. So right here, I have the markdown for my instructions. At the top, you can see a video Jekyll tag. Jekyll is another technology that we use in this tool. So here's how I embed the video at the top. Here's how I have my next button that hides everything next to it. And when clicking it, just scrolls the second step up and so on. So here's how, for example, I have my code block formatted with these backticks. And all these features are documented. If you can take a look at some resources for how to write markdowns, this will be helpful. Here's, for example, how I create my spoiler. And that's it for CS50 Lab.
And if you're familiar with platforms like Codecademy and such, which are these proprietary platforms for educational programming exercises, the goal was to allow teachers to create those very kinds of things, but using entirely open source tools and not having to lock into a particular platform.
That is correct. Finally, I have my CS50 IDE open here. And eventually, we want our students to sort of graduate to a more advanced, more general purpose programming environment. So here we have the CS50 IDE that features quite a few more features, actually, including a graphical C, C++, and Python debugger that we're going to demonstrate quickly here, as well as interactive real-time collaboration between students, and also real-time chat between them, and a few more features. So it's similar in spirit to those other programming environments. We have the file browser here on the left. We have the text editor here on the right and the terminal tab at the bottom. So let me, for example, demonstrate how the debugger works in this case. So I have my source code here for a simple program called Hello in a language called C. And this program does something as simple as printing hello to the terminal. So I'm going to start by setting a breakpoint to basically tell my IDE where I want to pause the execution of this program, and then compile my program using make. So make hello. And then run my program using a tool called debug50 that we have pre-baked into this IDE, and then the path for my executable file. And this pops up, as you can see, a debugging panel on the left that has students can step through their code and try to find what's wrong with it. They can see information about the program. If I have variables, they can watch the values of some variables, and so on. So again, this debugger also supports C++ and Python as well. And finally, we have this collaborate tab here in which we can see who is actually in this environment right now. It's just me, but if there were other people in this environment, they would show up here and they would be able to chat here as well.
If you've used, of course, Google Documents, where you can have multiple people editing the same document for classes that do peer programming, as it's called, having multiple students work on the same program, you can do that whether they're next to each other in the same room or halfway across the internet, opening the same workspace.
All right. Last thing that I wanted to mention is that the CS50 IDE, of course, has a few more settings, a few more preferences that give students essentially more fine-grained sort of control over their programming environments. And that's it for the CS50 IDE. Any questions about any of these tools? All right. Let me thank you so much. Let me turn things over to Brian.
All right. Thanks, Kareem. All right, so I want to talk about a couple of the other software-based tools that we use that students can use and that the teaching staff at CS50 use. And one of the problems that we have to solve with so many students is the problem of students submitting assignments. We want some efficient, easy way for students to be able to write their code and eventually submit their code, and then an easy way for the teaching staff to then be able to have access to student submissions, to be able to leave feedback on student submissions, even if students potentially are submitting an assignment multiple times before the deadline, for example. And so that's what Submit50 is designed to do. It's a software-based tool that students can run either in CS50 IDE or CS50 Lab or CS50 Sandbox, the tools that Kareem was showing you a moment ago, or students can run it on their own computers. But the idea is just a simple software tool that allows students to submit their work and to make sure that they submit the correct files associated with the problem. So I can go into CS50 IDE, for example. Kareem mentioned one of the assignments that we have in CS50 called Mario. And so a student might have a file that looks a little something like this in a file called mario.c as the file that they want to submit. And in order to submit an assignment, all the student needs to do is, at the terminal, type submit 50, the name of the program, followed by some unique identifier that identifies what the problem is that they're going to submit. And so I can type in ABCD/Mario, which is the unique identifier for this particular problem, and press return. And what's going to happen now is submit 50 is going to take this code and upload it to GitHub. So we use GitHub as our infrastructure, which is just an online platform for storing and sharing code. And we're using that infrastructure to make it easy to host code, to make sure that code is private so that only the student and their associated teaching fellow can have access to the code, and to make it easy for the staff to then to be able to provide feedback on that code. So students are first prompted to make sure that they actually want to submit these files. So we can say, yes, we want to submit these files. And we'll also check to make sure that the student submitted the correct file. So if they don't have the necessary files to submit this particular problem, they'll be warned about the fact that they might be submitting the wrong assignment, for example. So we can guard against that possibility as well. And so now it's submitted, and now if a student were to go to their GitHub account, each student gets their own private repository in an organization called Submit50, followed by their username. My username happens to be Student50. And so now you can see the student's submission of Mario.c gets a timestamp. And so the teaching fellow will also have access to this private repository and can see the code that the student submitted. And so it just makes it a little bit easier for students to be able to submit that code. And we also, for those familiar with GitHub, create a tag anytime that a student submits an assignment. And so what that allows us to do is it makes it very easy for a staff member then to go in and provide some comments. So a staff member can use GitHub's interface, if there's a line that they want to comment on to provide feedback to the student on, they can just click on this plus button, write a comment, and they'll see get that inline comment within the code that the student can see. Students get an email notification whenever that comment is left, so they know that their staff member has left feedback on their code. So it just facilitates the process of making submission, grading, and feedback a little bit easier. So that's Submit 50. In addition to submitting code, another problem that we have is checking students' code. We want to be able to quickly assess whether a student's code is correct. And oftentimes, code can look like it's correct, but might have a couple of bugs. And so in the past, what we've often had to do is like compile together a whole bunch of scripts, like one for each different problem throughout the semester. And the teaching staff would run these sort of homegrown scripts to test code to make sure that we can check to make sure that the code is correct. And so what we decided to do is standardize upon this process, creating a tool called Check50, which is designed to automate the process of correctness checking of student code. And this has two different use cases, one being a teacher-facing use case, whereby we as the course staff can very quickly run through all of the hundreds of submissions for any particular problem and test against a variety of different inputs to make sure that students' code is correct, to find where the mistakes might be. And likewise, we make this tool available to students as well. So if students are working on their code, they've written their code, they have access to Check50 to then be able to run it to ask the question, like, does my code work? Are there corner cases I haven't quite thought of? Are there places where I can work to make the code correct where I currently have mistakes? And so Check50 is designed to be both a student and a teacher-facing tool to allow for that quick correctness checking of student code. So the way that it works is very similar to the way that Submit50 works. I can go back into CS50 IDE. And if I have this code Mario.c and I'd like to test, like, does this actually work, I can just say, OK, let me check 50, run this program, ABCD/Mario. And what that's going to do is it's going to authenticate it, it's going to upload it up to GitHub, and then on our servers, we're going to download the code from GitHub and run a series of automated checks against this code. And so right now you can see that the code is checking. And when it's done checking, what we'll see is we will get, hopefully in a second. Great, so we get a series of smiley faces and frowny faces. So we run a whole bunch of automated tests. If the check passed, we get a smiley face next to the check. And also if a check failed, so this is a particular case that we didn't quite handle, the student will see in a red message the fact that this is a check that failed, and it will also describe why it is that check failed. What was it that we expected the student's code to do that the student's code didn't do? And so the student can look at that feedback, make any necessary changes, and then rerun check 50 in order to get a sense for what they can do in order to fix their code in order to make it correct. This entire tool is open source, so we make it available to any teachers who are writing programming problems and want to have checks run against student code. So all a teacher needs to do is upload to GitHub a file written in Python. And so all of the checks for students' codes can be written in Python, which is just a programming language that makes it very easy to put together these sorts of checks. And if you're familiar with Python, in effect, this is what these checks look like. There's one file or one function for every check that we want to run against students' code. And most of the checks take the form of, OK, let's go ahead and run the Mario program. Let's pass in some input to the program and then check to make sure that the output is the output that we expect. And so all of this is documented at the link in the slide. So if it's something that you or people you know might want to use for correctness testing against student code, the whole tool is open source and works not only for CS50's problems, but for any programming problems more generally. And then finally, in addition to checking code for correctness, one thing we like to encourage in the class is not only making sure that code is correct, but also that the code looks good. And this is important for readability purposes, so when the staff are reading it or when someone else is reading the student's code, it's not just enough that the code is correct, but it's also important that it's readable, that there it's well commented, that the code is very clear and different parts of it are separated, that the spacing is consistent and therefore is just nicer to look at and easier to read. And so what we want to teach in the class is a way of trying to get students to be able to learn good style practices with regards to code. And that's what Style 50 is designed to do. It's designed to help students learn how to style their code correctly. And so the way this works is that if a student has a file, for instance, we can use the same mario.c file that I've been working with so far, and there might be style mistakes here. We publish a style guide online that has a whole bunch of guidelines, but early on it takes time for students to learn these style guidelines, learn the best practices for style. So what a student can do is they can run style 50, followed by the name of the file that they would like to style check. So for example, mario.c in this case. And what style 50 is going to do is it's going to look through the entire file and look for areas where the style is inconsistent with the style guide, and then present some helpful guidelines for things that the student can do or change in their code in order to make the style a little more elegant or a little bit nicer, more consistent with our style guide. So here, all of these green markings are areas where we could add space, where right now there is not the correct indentation to make it clear as to what parts of the code are nested within other parts of the code, or places where adding more space could help to make the code clearer, and that's highlighted by these green highlights. And likewise, there are also green highlights that are up here as well. And so what we want to do is not fix the code for the student, but point out where the style inconsistencies are so that the student can go in now, identify, all right, yeah, that makes sense. I could add some space here in order to make the code more consistent, to make it more elegant, more consistent with the style guide. And once the student goes through and makes all these changes, adding the spaces where appropriate, adding indentation where appropriate, now the student can run style 50 again, and all right, now the code looks good, and they're given a message to indicate as much. And so this is designed to teach students not only to make sure their code is correct, but also to teach them these good style practices, to show them where the areas for improvement are, but they themselves need to be the ones to go into the file, make the changes, and then identify how to fix the style, and they're presented with a positive message once they're able to do so. So that's Submit 50, a tool for making it easy to submit code, view that code, and provide feedback on it. Check 50, a tool for automated correctness checking of students' code for use by students and teaching staff alike, as well as Style 50 for style checking students' code and offering students some feedback as to how to improve the style of the code. Questions about any of those tools? Yeah?
Do you ever put together the errors the students make to see if everyone's making the same certain errors or a lot of people?
So anytime check 50 is run, what will happen is we store the results of those checks online, which also means that students can go online to a web page to see the results of their checks as well, which offers a little bit more detail sometimes. But all that information is stored so we can then look at the code, we can look at the results of the correctness checks and identify what the common errors are, for instance. We have access to that. Yeah? We do. We've run these numbers a couple times. I don't remember them quite offhand, but I do remember that there's a sharp spike right before the deadlines. Yeah?
So each student in the class has their own GitHub account. Where does that come from?
So students create their own GitHub account at the beginning of the semester. We ask them to create their own GitHub account. For privacy reasons, the GitHub account doesn't necessarily need to correspond to their own names. We leave it up to them what their GitHub username is. And then when they log into a website that we have called cs50.me for the first time, they sign into that website with their GitHub username. And as a result, what we do is we take that and we create a repository for the students inside of our own Submit 50 organization and automatically give the student access to that particular repository. And so it's a private repository that we give the student access to, and then we can manually also give their teaching fellow access to it as well, so the teaching fellow can see their submissions. All right, with that, I'll turn things over to Aaron.
All right, so one other tool that we sort of wanted to take on in terms of
creating our own solution for us, a tool called Help 50. And this is mainly meant to help students in those first sort of few weeks of the course where they're writing programs in C. And if you're unfamiliar, it has a whole bunch of syntax that's very specific. So ending lines with semicolons, a bunch of braces. And it can be very frustrating for students to write their first program and get a long list of error messages that they don't necessarily know how to fix. So ultimately, this tool is meant to serve as sort of training wheels that students can sort of start here. And rather than hiding these error messages that are typically very arcane, we tend to want to highlight them and sort of ask these rhetorical questions that TFs might answer, that TFs might ask in office hours or the like, just to sort of get students thinking about, okay, did I have all my semicolons there? Did I include the right libraries? And so on. These are some of the tools that Help 50 supports. So Bash, Clang, Valgrind are ones particular to our course. So I'm going to show you a quick demo of how this works. So in a folder called Help 50, I have two files. So hello.c and hello1.c. So I'm going to try compiling this program called Hello. So let me go ahead and open this up just so you guys can see what this looks like. So right now, it's not all that important that we know what this does. All that maybe I'm trying to do is print something called Hello World. And I get this kind of error message. I can make this a little bit bigger. And it's kind of cluttered. I see that it's trying to get me to do something with a semicolon somewhere. But there's a lot going on. And maybe as a student, I don't want to try and spend all of my time parsing on what this means. So I might run something like help dot or space make hello. And instead of sort of reading all of that clutter at the top, I can scroll down to the bottom and it'll ask me, are you missing a semicolon at the end of line 5? So I can go ahead and add in that semicolon and do and save that. And now everything runs as expected. So a further use of this tool is maybe I'm doing something a little bit more complex. Let me open up another example called hello1.c. And so here I'm sort of doing the same thing, except I'm going to take input from the user. I want to make this a little bit more personalized. I want it to say hello and then my name. So let me go ahead and try running that. So make hello1. And looks like I got a bunch of errors. This time I got 6. Oh, that's a lot of things to look at. I don't necessarily want to spend all my time. I don't know which ones are important. There's a lot going on. I'm very stuck. What do I do? I'm going to, again, type in help 50 and then make hello 1. Okay, so it tells me to look at the first error, which is undeclared identifier string. Did you mean standard? No, I didn't. I meant string. Okay, so this last question here, did you forget to include CS50.h and which string is defined? No, I didn't do that. So I can do this, save that, and now when I make that with help 50, it says, hey, it looks like your program compiled successfully. So that's one of such tool. Another tool that we sort of developed over time is a tool called Compare 50. So unfortunately, in our course, it is not uncommon that students submit work that is not their own. In the tools that Brian showed you, we do prompt students to sort of, you know, make sure that they are submitting their own work. So it says, are you sure that you've like sort of looked over the course's academic honesty policy and that this is indeed your work? All too frequently, this is sort of not the case, where students are submitting work that they found online. So this is one such tool that we've developed to help us sort of match all of those students who have copied from an online source or maybe from another student. And so what this tool is meant to do is sort of replace those proprietary closed source tools that currently exist. And so this tool is completely open sourced. And its essential goal is to make this comparison process just a little bit easier and human friendly and just allow humans to compare thousands of submissions just from the command line. And coming soon is a web interface for this, so you can just drag in your student submissions and then it'll run those comparisons for you. So let me go ahead and open up a terminal. So right now I have in this directory a folder called Speller, a folder called Student 1, and a folder called Student 2. So let me go ahead and run compare 50, and I'll do a very base case with two students. So right now what I'm doing is I am plugging in the path to two student submissions. So I just want to compare Alice against Bob. So what this is going to do is it's going to sort of score these students based on a few different modes that we have in the interface that we'll soon see. So structure, exact, and misspellings are some of those modes that we've sort of designed for this tool. And then I can go to this URL down here. So let me copy that. All right, so I'm going to open up this index page. And because I only compare two students, I only see one result. So that's Alice against Bob in this case. And this is their submission of Mario. So we've seen Mario sort of come up across all of the tools that we've been talking about today. And it's just one of the programs that CS50 uses in our curriculum. So these submissions here are two students that matched against each other. So we can match them, we can cut this match of sort of three different ways using this tool. So we can structure, one of the modes is structure, and that just sort of looks at how the students solve the problem more generally. Like, did they use for loops in the same places? Did they use, did they both declare their variables all at the top? So right here, this is matching structurally because these two submissions are, you know, exactly the same there. Exact is going to highlight everything because these students seem to have copied or, you know, wrote the exact same solution to this problem. And misspellings is a mode that we developed ourselves that sort of compares comments and looks at what misspelled words in the comments are the same. So for example, in a problem called resize that we have in the course, students may type picture wrong in the same place. And so this will look for, oh, this student misspelled the word picture and so did this one. And it's in the exact same comment or the exact same line. So it is pretty common that you're not just going to have two students in your course. So how might we go about sort of looking at a full class of submissions? So I'm going to go ahead and navigate into my speller directory. And I have two folders here. I have a folder of distro, which is short for distribution. This is the code that we give students to start with. So it's starter code. Submissions is the folder that all of our students' work is in. So if I just cd into submissions, we can see a whole bunch of random students here. And so I want to look at all of my students compared against each other, but I want to ignore distribution code. It's not all that important for me to look at matches if they're matching stuff that we gave them to begin with. So I'm going to go ahead and run compare 50 again. I'll be in speller, and I will do compare 50, and I want to look at all of those submissions in my submissions folder. So slash star is just a shortcut of saying, hey, include everything that exists in that file. I can also use these tags dash x or exclude, and here I'm going to exclude everything, but I want to only include maybe things that end in .c and maybe things that end in .h, for example. And then the tag that I can use to get rid of distro code is going to be dash d, and then I just list the path to that distro, and I'm going to run that. So this is going to take a little bit longer because it's trying to strip out all of that distro code from those matches, so it's really only comparing what students wrote themselves. And that dash X again is short for exclude, and the dash I is short for include. So this will just take a little while. All right. And again, it's scoring on those same sort of metrics that we saw before: structure, exact, and misspellings. But it has significantly more students to compare against each other. All right, so once that's done, I can go ahead and open that index page as well. And so here I see, you know, the top 50 or so matches for this particular comparison that I ran. I'm going to go ahead and look at the first one. And so I'm by default looking at the structure mode But again, I can just as easily click on exact or misspellings, and then I can also navigate through all of my results using these left and right arrows at the top. Yeah, so that is Compare 50 at a glance. Happy to take questions on both Compare 50 and Help 50. All right, I'll pass things over to David.
So that then was, very anticlimactic, the end. At that URL are all of the slides, including all of those URLs, the documentation therefor. Thanks so much to Susan and to the whole ABCD chairs and to the group. We're big fans of ABCD. You are always all welcome to our CS50 fair and other events and talks on campus. But thanks so much for joining us today. And we're happy to stick around for one-on-one questions after if you want slower, more hands-on demos. Thanks.